And as I said before, my name is Russell Spatz, and I am an alcoholic. And I am a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's a privilege for me to be here. And I haven't found necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 25th, 1981. And I'm very grateful for that. It's not a record around here. It's a record for me. My sponsor, who's sitting over there, has 57 years. And what are you? Is he acting up again? Well, you know, I could tell you stories about him, but I won't. I'll restrain myself. You're welcome. But this is, it's good to be here with you guys. I like this group. Well, I like all alcoholics. I was over at the West Coast, and I'm not talking about Naples, I'm talking about California, hanging out. There's a little group there of guys that I hang out with. A bunch of them meet at the Coffee Bean at 6:30 in the morning in the Pacific Palisades. We have coffee, and then we walk over, have a men's meeting, and I'll be going up to New York in a little while, visiting some friends up there, and in Virginia and Knoxville. And you know, when you've been around for a while, you develop friendships and groups. You know, it says in the back of the big book, and Vision for You, it says God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. I didn't even know I craved fellowship, but apparently I do. And you create a spiritual fellowship. That's why they call it fellowship of the Spirit. It's actually from, I think it's from the book of Corinthians, where the Apostle Paul refers to the fellowship of the Holy Spirit. And I'm gonna talk a little bit about step 10 tonight, but in a different type of way. I think it's a different type of way. I'm not sure. I was talking to Barry, came down from Fort Lauderdale, and it's good to have him here. And we were talking about, he was listening to one of the tapes, I think on the fourth step. I'm not sure which one it was on. One of the talks, and he said something, I've heard this before, fairly often, and I'm just reporting, believe me, it's not about, he said, you know, I really like, he's been around for like 9 or 10 years, he says, I like listening to your tapes, he says, I was listening, he says, because I've never heard a step done like that before, and I know, I sort of know what he's referring to, because I get that a lot. You know, I got a lot of people, they say to me, you know, I like listening to him because I've just never heard it done that way before. I mean, I've heard it a lot. And I guess what they mean and what I think they mean when I talk to them and what I'm about is I'm, when I first started doing these steps, I've been doing for like 27 years now. I've been sober for 30 years. I've been probably talking about it for 27. When I first started doing the steps, I think I was more interested in there's nothing wrong with this. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with people doing this. People need to learn how to do this with like the nuts and bolts of the steps. I mean, how do you do step 5? How do you do step 4? You know, the charts, the bells, the whistles. I mean, you know, the truth of the matter is, you can read the book, and it tells you how to do the steps. If you're really, I mean, my guess is, if you were desperate enough and you really wanted to do these steps, you could probably pick up the book and read it, and there's a chart in there, and it tells you how to do it. And if you follow directions, very hard for an alcoholic, you could figure out how to do the steps, you know, and you could figure out how to do it. But it's nice to hear from other people, to hear their testimony, their experience, strength, and hope, you know, and hear it, and hear how a person did the steps, and sort of fill in the gaps, and that stuff is good. And I guess for the first 10 or 15 years of my sobriety, I did a lot of my talks had to do with, you know, how to do it, you know, how to actually do step 4, how do you do step 8, how did I do step 8, and certainly some of that will creep into that deal, because I believe it's important to talk about your experience, give your testimony, and things like that. But in the last, you know, 10 or 15 years for me, my life has turned in a different direction. And I'd like to think it's a direction that I would pray that every believer and every alcoholic's life turns into because of the results you get from it. And I suppose what I've been more interested in anything else is what I think is the main point of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, what I think is the main point of Alcoholics Anonymous at all, and that is relationship with God. You know, in my sense, relationship with the Lord, because I'm a Christian guy. But I mean, but it's the God of, as you understand God, I'm not here to shove anything down anybody's throat or impose my beliefs on anybody. But the point is, that's been my focus. But you know, if you read the steps and you see they're all about God, and you actually read the big book in the 12 and 12, where it talks about developing a relationship with God, and I'm not going to go through and read all the quotes from the book, which basically says, job or no job, wife or no wife, it's not about that. Don't let anybody say it's nonsense. They need this. All they need is to trust in God and cling out. So it's all about the relationship with God. It's clear, even if you just go to the 11th step, that ultimately where we wind up with is a relationship with God, a God that works, a faith that works, and that we constantly strive from then on in to improve our conscious contact with Him. You know, and that's why it says, one of the last lines of the big book is, see to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. And I suppose with all the bells and whistles and all the activity I do in my life, and everything I'm about in my life right now, no matter what step you think I'm on or what I'm doing, it's really all about Him and focusing on Him and looking at Him and trying to get closer to Him. And that's what my life is about. So that's been reflected. That is pretty much reflected in the steps I did. So somehow or some way, I guess the most people, when I get up there, whether I'm on step 4, step 5, or step 10, it probably all sounds like a step 3 meeting to you. You know, I mean, it probably does, you know, because to me it is all a step 3 meeting. Because all I see is Him in every step I do. And so most of my steps are not write down this or do this or, you know, do it this way. It's all about Him and how He figures into the steps and what's the results of believing in Him. You know, and I have a real heart for not only newcomers, but I have a real heart for people that have been around for a long time, 9, 10, 15, 20 years and stuff like that, who are miserable, who have not been rocketed, who have not realized the promises, okay? And I know those people are all over Alcoholics. And, you know, I sponsored really hundreds of men, and I've worked with thousands of them. And although, you know, you tend to look at the people that are around you right now, and you have a lot of friends and relations in AA, and you think that, but what you really never see is you never see the many thousands of people that are no longer around. And I am absolutely quite convinced that maybe 60 to 70% of the men I've met in Alcoholics Anonymous are dead, or never made it, or fell short, or things like that, that they're actually not around. And I am very conscious of the fact that, like it says, there's a narrow road and very few. You know, my sponsor, when I first came in, what did he say? He said something to me. I don't know. It was a long time ago. Some sort of phrase. I'll remember it, you know, halfway through this thing. But he said basically, you know, few really get this. Many are called, but few are chosen. That was a statement I remember him saying. One of the first things he says, you know, Russ, many are called, but few are chosen. And I believe that to be true because I've seen him slip in 5 years. I've seen him slip in 10 years. I've seen him slip in 20 years. So if you want to ask what does this have to do with the 10th step, this is what this has to do with the 10th step. I've said this over and over again, I guess, for the last 15 years. The 10th step is not about taking an inventory. It's not. It's not about taking an inventory. You know why? Because it says continue to take personal inventory, right? Continue to take personal, which means they must have talked about it before, right? Well, the inventory they're talking about is the 4-step inventory, the way we did in the 4-step. So the 4-step is about taking an inventory. And when we're wrong, promptly admitting it, right? That's about like the 9th step. That's about the 5th step. That's about all those steps you did before. The 10th step is about one thing and one thing only. It's not about all those other things that you learned how to do. The 10th step is about continuing. Continuing is a very important thing. Continuing is the difference between 30 years of contented sobriety and slipping after 17 years. Continuing is the, you know, every time I've seen anybody slip in Alcoholics Anonymous, every time, it's because they failed to continue. Whether they got 90 days, 9 months, or 9 years, it's because they failed to continue. If I was you, and you know, I can't tell you, and I'm not making this up, this isn't theory to me, I can't tell you how many times I've seen men or women who do the steps like I'm doing tonight, who teach the steps, who sponsor people, who have 5, 10, 15 years sober, who are as solid as a rock, okay, who end up drinking, going out, or committing suicide. So let me tell you something. Sincerity has very little to do with it. You can't nail that sucker to the wall. It's not like you can say, listen, it scares me when somebody says, I ain't never going to drink again. I really got this thing. I really believe, you know what I mean? You can't nail this sucker in the wall. It's like nailing Jell-O to the wall. You know what I mean? What this is about continuing. So if you want to figure out what I'm going to talk about tonight, I'm going to talk about the only thing that I think is important in the 10th step, the only thing this is about, and that is continuity of effort, continuing. That's what I want to talk about. That's what this whole thing is about. And the question is, and you know, the whole, to a certain extent, it's sort of like a mystery. You know, we sit around, why did he slip? Why did he didn't slip? And I have a theory about that. It's a theory I think is born on fact and experience, and I'm just, hey, listen, you know, this is just my opinion, doing an AA meeting based upon my experience, my own personal life and what I've seen, and you're free to reject it or accept it or for whatever it is it's going to do for you or not do for you. I have a theory on that deal, but I want to talk about the difference between building a house on sand or building a house on a rock. The difference between being 15 years sober and out there in nowhere's land and drinking and drugging or having a horrible life and not having any idea of how it happened that way and not having any idea how to fix it up. And the reason you can't fix it up because the whole thing is built upon some crap you laid on in the foundation when you had 3 months. And you'd have to tear down the entire structure in order to fix it. And building your house on a rock where nothing, cancer, death, nothing can move it. You know, in the book Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, it says, you know, as you know, the AA started in 1935. The big book was written in 1939. So in 1939, they said, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. But their path did not include reading the big book, because it started in 1935. So they worked this program, whatever this program was, for 4 years. And then they wrote a book and said, do what we do and you'll get what we got. And they didn't have the big book. And what you, if you actually want to look into reading conference approved material, there's no conference disapproved material, but if you want to look in the conference approved material and read the Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, which I suggest you might want to get a hold of, it talks about everything they did for the first 4 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. The books they read, what they did, how they did it. And believe it or not, you may find this hard to believe, most of the things they did for the first 4 years, even after they read the big book, they continued to do for 10 or 15 years after that. In other words, if they were reading the Bible for 4 years and they stayed sober and they wrote a book and they said, this is the big book, do what we did, and those guys did not throw away the Bible and throw away every book they're reading and say, okay, now let's go to the big book. The guys who were the old timers, they continued to do what they were doing for many years. And so one of the things I did when I came in here, and I had no religious persuasion or no God persuasion, or I was like every other alcoholic, you know, I worshipped Playboy bunnies and, you know, American Express card, and, you know, my ticket to freedom would be money, and, you know, all the things that people complain and whine about, I worshipped that stuff. But somehow, some way, I fell in with people because they became my we. It says, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get, then you're ready to take certain steps. I was fortunate enough or blessed enough to be attracted to men that were not interested in that stuff. They were interested in spiritual development. They were interested in God. And so I read books like Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. And when you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, the three books that they said were absolutely essential, they meaning the old timers in AA, they mean the founders in AA. And this is written, this is not my opinion. This is not some kooky thing I found out. This is in our literature. The three books they found were essential were Sermon on the Mount, you know, which is Matthew 5, 6, and 7 of the New Testament, 1 Corinthians 13, and the book of James. As a matter of fact, the book of James, we were almost called the James Club. It was either going to be Alcoholics Anonymous or the James Club, you know, named after the Apostle James. That's how strongly they believed in that stuff. So if you want to feast upon and understand the context of the stuff they were, if you want to drink the Kool-Aid they were drinking, and find out what those guys were doing, you'd have to actually study those books. Now, when I came in, they sort of, I don't want to say they watered it down, but the way I was fed it is in a little book called the 24-Hour Book, which we used to have, which you'd read, which they still have, which is a combination where it's a daily reading of it would have saints from the big book, saints from the Bible, saints from the 12 and 12, and things like that. And my sponsor handed me a book by Emmett Fox called Sermon on the Mount. It's not the Sermon on the Mount, it's a commentary on Sermon on the Mount, which is very popular in AA. But in the book Sermon on the Mount, which is the only sermon given by Jesus in the book, it says the last thing he says, where he basically outlines the Christian life, okay, or outlines a life of principle, or a life of believing in God, or a life that works. He says this, the last thing he says is this. He said, the very last thing he says, after all these people are listening to him, they're like amazed at what he's saying. The last thing he says is this. He says there was, he talks about building your, he says, I look at a man who hears the words I say and does them as a wise man, because the rains will come and the wind will blow and his house will stay because it's built upon a rock. But the man who hears my words and doesn't do them, he's an unwise man, because the winds will blow and the rain will come and his house will fall because it's built upon sand. And that has to do with permanency versus something that's just here for a few months or a decade or 15 or 20 years and then falls apart. You know, there's a lot of, you know, what happens is when you have something wrong with the structure of a house, when it's not built properly, it might look good for 10 years. It might look good for 15 years. It might even look good for 20 years. But after a while, if there's a defect in that structure, that defect will take hold. And it will eventually fall. It will fall because a 20-year marriage will go down the drain. Or you'll be sober for 20 years and you'll not have a relationship with your children. Or you'll be lonely. Or you'll be depressed. Or you'll be popping pills because you'll be bipolar or depressed. Or they'll be, it'll somehow show when you're, or you'll be angry or you'll be mad. Or you'll drink again. It will show up. No matter how, and you want to know something? I've been around for 30 years. I know a lot of guys with 25 years that want to blow their brains out. But you wouldn't know them because they know how to talk at Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. They're certainly not rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. You know, and you want to know something crazy about AA? It's like getting a driver's license. You could be a paranoid schizophrenic. And if you're over the age of 16 and you know how to drive, they'll give you a license. You want to know something? Alcoholics Anonymous, you could hate the entire world yourself and not be able to have a decent human being with another human being or yourself. And if you stay sober for a year, they're going to give you a medallion. They'll give you a medallion if you got 20 years. But anybody knows anything about old timers and emotional sobriety knows that it's not about physical sobriety. Although, I know there's some old kook there says, yeah, it's like putting a plug in the jug, you know. It's important, you know. You're not going to get anywhere unless you put the plug in the jug. But the bottom line is you ain't going to keep it. And it isn't going to be satisfactory sobriety or emotional sobriety or the sobriety Bill Wilson was talking about unless you get something else. So what I'm going to do, what I want to talk to you about is I'm going to read a few things from the big book, and lest anybody report me for New York for heresy, you know, I'm going to read stuff out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous in 12 and 12. And here's the deal. You try to figure it out. You figure out what continuing is. You figure out what continuing is about. You figure out what they were talking about. Because you want to know something? The truth is hidden. There's like a secret in the big book. You know that? The big book carries a secret. The 12 and 12 carries a secret. There's a secret there. It's a secret as to how you can have long-lasting, contented sobriety. It's somewhere in the writings of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, the fellowship hasn't figured it out yet. As a matter of fact, the fellowship, if you tell the fellowship the secret, they'll try to beat you up. They don't want to hear the secret. Because the secret requires giving up selfishness and self-centeredness. And anybody who knows anything about this disease knows it's a disease that celebrates uniqueness, individuality, and selfishness and self-centeredness. So the last thing we want to do through many different rationalizations, you know, to rationalize, tell rational lies, is to figure out what the loopholes are. I'm an attorney. What's the loopholes? It says that about, it says there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now, but what do they mean by God anyway? Maybe it's a doorknob, okay? A relationship with a doorknob. Maybe I was created by a doorknob. No, that doesn't work. Well, that's good enough. You know, good orderly direction. Maybe it's good orderly direction. Well, it says in the big book, if a mere philosophy of life or a better philosophy of life would have saved us, we would have been sober long ago, but it didn't work for us. And the problem is, as you read the big book, if you're going to be honest, don't they say the one thing you need is honesty? If you're going to be honest about the English language, the only thing that works is the deity God. Because they so much say it, they say they don't define God. They say it right here, where they say, right in the big book, they say it all over, but it says, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed, we had a new employer being all-powerful, which doesn't seem to fit the doorknob. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and did his work well. Doesn't seem to fit the cat. You know, so there's something else going on, and they talk about the Creator, our Creator. Father of life. They liken it to a father-child relationship, to employer relationship. So they're pretty sort of like, without saying it, they're pretty clear what they're talking about. I mean, you would have to be what we call in the legal profession, willfully blind not to see what they're talking about. Willful blindness. It actually has to legal. You know, if you're carrying the 10 pounds of cocaine across the border in a suitcase, and they're giving you $100,000 to do that, and they catch you, and they open it up, they found the 10 kilos of coke, and you say, "Well, I never looked inside. I didn't know it was there." It's not a good defense. They call it willful blindness. You get nabbed for it anyway, even if you didn't know it was in there. You get nabbed for the stuff in there anyway. It's not a good defense to say, I didn't know because I didn't look inside the suitcase. You know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, in order to build your life upon the rock instead of sand, you got to look inside the suitcase and see what's really there. You know, you can fake it until you make it. But listen, here's the deal. Eventually, you're actually supposed to make it. You know, you really can't fake it for 9 or 10 years. You get nowhere. So I'm going to read you a couple of things that I picked up, some things, and, you know, we'll see where this thing is going to take us. And I want to start right here. I'm going to start on Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. I'll tell you where the page starts so you can check later on and see whether I'm not fooling you or something. This is about Bill Dotson, who was Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. He was a lawyer, you know, and he was sitting in his living room. He was 3 weeks sober. And he was watching Bill Wilson. And he was doing really what I've been doing for the last 30 years around here, certainly for the last 10 or 15 years. He was thinking the same things I was thinking of when I had 9 years and 8 years sobriety. His thoughts were my thoughts. What he's saying is the reason I went to step meetings and following these guys around. And this is what he said. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program, and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. You ever get the feeling, no matter where you are, that there's something you hadn't got? I used to go to these meetings, I used to look at these guys, old-timers I guess you call them, not all the old-timers, but just a few, and I knew there was even more, I knew there was something I hadn't got, and I wanted it, and I didn't even know what it was. I didn't even know what it was that I hadn't got. I didn't even know how to get it, but I knew there was something more, I knew there was something I hadn't got. I feel sorry for the person that doesn't know that there's something more, that there's something he hadn't got. It's not even looking for something. You know, it says if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it. You know, some people don't even see what we have. And even if they saw it, they don't really want to go to any length to get it. You know, what did they have? I'll tell you what they had. They tell you what they had. This is what they had. Right here. They say it right here in the big book. This is the book. This is our basic text. We all agree on it. It says, we have found... Now, I want you to listen to this. Hey, let's make believe this stuff is legitimate. True, you know what I mean? That we, you know, that we don't give just lip service to it, but we actually believe in it. That we believe they're not lying. I mean, is our whole fellowship, is your whole life built upon lies? A book of lies? Let's believe that of what they're saying, that this is the truth. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. Now, how many people think they're talking about not drinking? How many people think they're talking about not drinking? Because they could have said, we stopped drinking. They probably say it somewhere later on or before that. They said, we have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. Well, I'm going to tell you something. I'm not going to hurt anybody's feelings. I'm just going to tell you something. If you haven't found heaven and been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence of which you would not even dream, then you don't have what they had. And you haven't got what they got. You got physical sobriety, but you don't got what they got. Don't kid yourself in believing you got what they got. And I don't care whether you don't like me because I said that. It doesn't matter to me. Because, you know, the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. You know, they said in A Few Good Men, you come to my office and says the truth, you can't handle the truth. The great fact is this, and just this, and nothing less, which means nothing less. that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. Now listen to this. I'm going to read this to you. See, here's the problem. See, what happens is people read the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and they read it, but they don't remember what Jesus said. He said, the person who hears the things I say and does them. There are a lot of people that hear what's being said here, that they don't do them, they don't put it into practice, they don't even go for them. You know, it like goes right over, it goes, shoo, just right over their head until they got 15 years sobriety, and their marriage is breaking up, and the kids don't love them, and they're sucking on the barrel of a gun. It goes right over their head, and they're saying, what's wrong? And then they're so far out there, they can't even be brought back. Because they made a right turn, they took the wrong exit on I-95, and they've been traveling for 5 hours, and now they can't get back, and they're in the woods. And they don't even know where they don't even know that they took the wrong exit 5 hours ago. They don't even know where they went wrong. And they went wrong because they thought they were doing the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they weren't. They were doing their program, which was a whole different program. There's no skin in the game. There's no giving up anything. It says this. It says, the central fact of our lives today, the central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. Now, I'm going to tell you something right now. I don't really care whether you ship it up to New York or not. If that's not happened to you, you don't got this thing. Now, I think it's great that you're sober. I think it's great you're picking up medallions. I think you could get it. I think maybe one day some of you will get it. I think it's great that you're all here listening. Okay? But I'm just telling you an absolute truth. If you don't have what they just said in there, you don't got what they have. You don't got that deal. Now, you go into an AA meeting, and you ask them this. Say, you go up to somebody and say, do you have an absolute certainty that your Creator lives in your heart? And see what they say. Why don't you just have a meeting? Hey, how about that being a topic for a meeting instead of romantic relationships? Because that's the central fact. That's the great fact. Does your Creator live in your heart? Now, you know you'll hear an AA if you do that. They'll laugh at you. They'll say, we don't want to hear that crap. Right? Which is probably why we got problems in Alcoholics Anonymous, why we have problems in River City. It's probably why you got a lot of people running around here not feeling so good about themselves because of that deal. So in any event, if you are seriously, am I disturbing you? No, am I disturbing you? No, you go ahead and finish up, and I'll finish up when you're done. It says, He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. So I'm going to read a few things, and you figure out who they're talking about or what they're talking about. How about this one? This is right out of step 10. Right out of step 10. This is step 10 in the big book. It's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent upon our spiritual condition. Now, what do they mean by spiritual condition? You know how people like to say in AA, this is a good rational lie. This is a good way to get out of God. You know what's a good way to get out of God? Say something like this. Well, I'm spiritual, not religious. You know, as I said, I'm a Christian. You know, sometimes a Christian will come up to me and says, well, I'm a sinner. I'm a sinner. I said, really? That's why I love AA. Because in AA, say, I'm an alky. I'm a pervert. I'm nuts. I'm crazy. I said, really? What do you mean you're a sinner? I mean, you watch. What do? You watch pornography. You know, you beat your wife. I mean, no. I'm a sinner. You know, I say, well, what do you mean? He says, well, I littered the other day. I said, no skin in the game. You know what I mean? It means nothing. As a matter of fact, it's almost like saying, well, you see, I'm perfect. I'm so perfect. Listen, I'm a sinner. You know, it's almost like you say it to show that how wonderful you are. And the fact of the matter is, well, that's what this spirituality has become. Spirituality, saying I'm spiritual, has become a way of saying, basically, I don't have to believe in God. I don't really have to have my creative mind because I'm spiritual. I listen to spiritual music. I'm spiritual. What does that mean? Is that Alcoholics Anonymous? I mean, they use the word spiritual all over the place. But then it goes on to say this. They define it. every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. And here's a really strange thing. They have that line, thy will, not mine, be done, in quotation marks. These are the thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. In defining spirituality, they define it as an individual who goes through life constantly and continuously says, thy will, not mine, be done. Whether he's broke, whether he has money, whether he's doing well, whether he's got cancer, whether he doesn't have cancer, thy will, not mine, be done. That's how they define, talking about God's will. This whole program and everything about it ultimately comes down to define yourself in relationship to God. Not some fluffy thing. Much has already been said about receiving strength and inspiration, direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. I don't think they're talking about the doorknob. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, and Spirit is capitalized. As a matter of fact, His is capitalized. To some extent, we have become God-conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. But we must go further, and that means more action. That means more action. Let's go on to the 12 and 12. Step 10 in the 12 and 12. And I've sort of culled this down. It says this. But when we approach step 10, we commence to put our A way of living into practical use day by day, in fair weather or foul. Then comes the acid test. Can we stay sober, keep an emotional balance, and live to good purpose under all conditions? You know, I think, I don't know about you, but I'm just going to say, as I was growing up in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know what impressed me the most? What impressed me the most is that men that were always, I say men, but also women, that were steady. You know what I mean by steady? I mean, you can go to AA meetings every day and you hear about people in crisis. I mean, basically what AA is, it's like a giant soap opera. I mean, really, you got a group of 30 people. You got 30 people that are, you know, thumb-sucking crybabies and in crisis up and down. You know, if it's not your day, it's something. I mean, everybody's in fear. The only deal is, at least we're not all in fear at the same time about the same thing on the same day. You know what I mean? But this one's got this problem, that one's got that problem, you know, and I'm not putting that down, and I understand that's the deal. But the guy that impressed me in Alcoholics Anonymous is the guy that always seemed, he was usually an old-timer, 20, 30 years, always seemed to have his act together. He was never crying. He was never whining. He was never super, super up or super, super day. He was always in a good mood, always trying to help other people, never in crisis. And I used to assume, sometimes I would assume that he didn't have problems. That he just had obviously $1 million in the bank somewhere. And then you would find out, if you hung around long enough, that these guys would have cancer, that the kids would have committed suicide. I mean, that horrendous things were going on in their lives. And they were like steady as a rock. Like the story I tell about Al Kennedy, I've already told you, where I went to a meeting and he tells us he's just talking and just helping people. And he's lifting them up. And he walks out the door. I said, man, that guy was great. And I find out he has 3 months to live. And he never even mentioned it. He never even mentioned it. Let me ask you something. You know, you hear a lot of whining and crying in AA. You hear a lot of yelling and screaming and all sorts of stuff in AA. What do you think it does to a man when you're sitting in a meeting and there's a guy who's dying next to you and doesn't even mention it and just trying to help people? Whew. That's the guy who's built his house upon a rock. That's the kind of stuff I want. I don't know what you want, but that's the kind of stuff I want. I never thought that kind of stuff was available to me. And that's what they're talking about. They're talking about continuing. They're talking about continuing. And they're not talking about continuing feeling crappy about yourself. Just sort of hanging in there kind of thing. And every, you know, we do hang in there every once in a while. It says this. How about this one? It's a spiritual axiom. And the reason I throw this in is because I think my life, to a certain extent, is built upon this one. I mean, and I don't know how to explain this to you. You just have to deal with this. I'll just say it and you'll do it. It's a spiritual axiom that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me. Whenever we're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me. You know, it's hard to do that, especially when you think somebody else is wrong too. You know, really, there's something, I gotta look at me. But I'll tell you, when you get that even inside of you and you understand that, I think when you accept that, it's the greatest key to spiritual freedom and understanding what's going on with you. You know, it doesn't mean you don't get off balance or you don't have problems or anything like that, but I'll tell you what it allows you to do is anything that happens in your life that disturbs you or bothers you, you get to look at that and say what's really going on. You get to talk about it. It sort of helps you fine-tune things. How about this one? As an insurance against big-shotism, we can often check ourselves by remembering that we are today sober only by the grace of God, and that any success we may be having, is far more His success than ours. I want to read that again, because I actually think it's even more than that. As an insurance against big-shotism, we can often check ourselves by remembering that we are today sober only by the grace of God, and that any success we may be having is far more His success than ours. You get a sense as to what these people are about? I mean, I was reading from the big book. 15 years later, I'm reading about this. They're talking about an attitude. I don't want to say it's hard to explain. I don't think it is hard to explain, but it's like, you know, you feel like saying one of these things, well, unless you're there, you know. You ever say to somebody, you try to tell a joke, you try to tell something, and it doesn't like translate into English, but you say, I guess you have. You ever say something like, well, I guess you had to be there? You ever use the term, I guess you had to be there? You can't describe it, say, I guess you just had to be there. I guess you just have to be there. I mean, how can I explain a life that no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how long you're sober, no matter what's going on, you are absolutely convinced, you absolutely know that's because of God's grace. How can I explain that to you? I mean, I know there are people in the room that are nodding their head and they know exactly what I'm talking about, and there's people in the room that are looking at me and they understand the words, but they don't know what I'm talking about at all. That doesn't make it any less valid. I know this. I know these people knew exactly what I was talking about because they had their Creator living in their hearts and minds, which was indeed remarkable. And He was changing things for them, which He couldn't change for change for themselves, and I knew they knew exactly what I was talking about, and I know that I am in sync with them, and if they were here today, I could hang out with them, and I could talk to them, and they could talk to me, because they know exactly how I feel, and know exactly how they feel, and I know that because of that, I have what they had, and that it's built upon a rock. If you don't have that deal, you know, I can't explain it into you. I can't explain it into you. I can just expose myself and expose this book and let you know this is a real thing. This isn't just because Russell's a Christian or because he's religious or he believes in God. This is the reality of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the only thing that's real and permanent in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not making this stuff up. It's embedded in the big book. It's embedded in the 12 and 12. No matter how much horseshit you hear in the air about how people are trying to hide it, or trying to make believe you shouldn't say it, or watering it down, it's right here, it's right in the middle of it, and I don't care whether you believe it or not, you'll find out about it when you're 5 years sober, 10 years sober, and 15 years sober, 20 years sober, when you drink again, and maybe then you'll remember this little conversation we're having. Nobody gets away with anything. This ain't a dress rehearsal. Well, I think I screwed up, I'll try it over again next week. Page 93 of step 10. Courtesy, kindness, justice, and love are the keynotes by which we may come into harmony and practically anybody. When in doubt, we can always pause saying, quote, not my will, but thine be done. End of quote. And we can all often ask ourselves, am I doing to others as I would have them do to me today? Not my will, but thine be done. Again in quotes, the same thing in quotes. Who are they quoting? You might want to look into who they're quoting and where it comes from. My will, not thine be done. Thy will, not mine be done. I mean, thy will, not mine be done. An honest regret for harms done, a genuine gratitude for blessings received, and a willingness to try for better things tomorrow will be the permanent assets we shall seek. Having so considered our day, not omitting to take due note of things well done, and having searched our hearts with neither fear nor favor, we can truly thank God for the blessings we have received and sleep in good conscience. I mean, does anybody see like a pattern here? Anybody here see like a theme here? Let me finish this up by just reading the last part, something I left out. Remember Alcoholics Anonymous 3 where I started this thing off? Bill Dotson. If we go back to that thing, remember the guy who said there was something more, something I hadn't got? Well, let me read you the rest of that deal. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something that I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I had come home out of the hospital, Bill Wilson was over to my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch. They're sitting around the table. Bill is eating a tuna fish sandwich. You're looking for a white light? He's sitting in his living room in his kitchen. Bill is eating a sandwich. But he was listening. He says, and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. What was actually going on here? Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. I thought, I think I have the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing and he had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. Because when you're grateful to a loving God, who for no reason that you deserve it, lifts this disease from you, you can't help but tell other people about it. And believe me, nobody understands that better than me. I don't care if people don't like me. I don't care if they walk out on me. I don't care if they talk behind my back. I don't care if they snicker. I really don't care. I'm not sober because of them. My sobriety has nothing to do with them. It really doesn't even have that much to do with the rooms, although meetings are important and all that is important. You know, in the end, at 3 o'clock in the morning, when you have the cancer, the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous won't be there. My sponsor may not be there. Nobody may be there. You know, when push comes to shove, when everything goes, your job ain't going to be there, your boss ain't going to be there. Your best friend ain't going to be there. That gal, that guy ain't going to be there. It's going to be you alone with your thoughts and whatever relationship with whatever you got going for you at that time. And that's when it's all going to be either rock or sand. The Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep telling people about it. It's been a sort of golden text for the AA program and for me. Thank you very much.